You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Massive Report podcast. We are not at Saucy Brew Works, but Ori's going to tell you about them in just a moment. And someday we'll be there. See, Ori has a new haircut too. Very nice. Looking sharp. Like and subscribe to the Massive Report podcast wherever you find it. We would so much appreciate the love. It's a short slate as far as who's on here tonight, but that's okay. We've got a lot to talk about, as always. Murph is here. Ori's here. Bart is here. My name is Brian. And we have happy things to talk about. But before this, it is Saucy Brew Works. Ori!
Guys, Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Check them out on 443 West 3rd Avenue. Again, that is 443 West 3rd Avenue. We will hopefully be there very, very soon and recording in person again for the first time in God knows how long.
I know. At this point, we're all ready to go as far as the vaccine, but we need Sam to do it because we can't figure out where to plug stuff in. You'd think I'd know how to do that at this point, but it's best that you keep me away from the equipment. And that's always two. Toronto won. What I love was the left side, which we have been looking for all season. Suddenly back and the whole side of the field just opens up. Ori, break it down for us.
Yeah, Pedro Santos playing left back. I'm certain pretty much every single person that saw that lineup was sort of looking at it with the confused face, just kind of like, okay. And as Pat pointed out on Twitter, when the lineup came out, Pedro Santos had played left back a couple times before when Greg Berhalter was the manager. So it's not an area of the field that he's completely foreign to. And I think Caleb Porter kind of understood, you know, no Waylon Francis, no Milton Valenzuela for this game. They needed to utilize that left side more and get more creative on the whole, you know, spectrum of the pitch and be able to utilize the left side more. Puts Pedro Santos at left back, puts Etienne on that left wing, and they just play very, very well. Toronto didn't really have much of a threat from that side, but obviously Pedro Santos, when it came to distribution and attacking from the left back position, phenomenal, two assists. And then he was decent on one-on-one defending. He wasn't sublime, but he did very, very well when it came time for him to actually defend in contained situations. And also his positioning was very good too. So I don't think it's going to be something that we're going to see often, but I think it gives people confidence that you have a little bit of variation, a little bit of versatility in the lineup. And Caleb Porter, you know, is somebody you don't often see play guys sort of out of their natural positions. Pedro Santos played left back and center mid in that win against Toronto. And I think you'd want to see a little bit more of that. I'm pretty sure Alex Matan was kind of playing as a striker there for like the last 3-4 minutes there of the game. So I think with how athletic a lot of the guys are on this team, and I know Bart's got something to say, This is definitely a team where you can put guys in different spots and they can still succeed. And I'd love to see Caleb Porter do that more.
Well, I think that the thing to consider too for Caleb Porter is, you know, looking at trying to find ways to get a guy like Pedro Santos on the field when a Kevin Molino comes back. If you feel like, you know, you're still getting, we finally see that elusive goal from Lucho Diaz. You know, he's been kind of knocking at the door. So if you're forcing, if you've got a guy like Kevin Molino back and you've got, you know, Luis Diaz, who's not letting you put him on the bench. And especially, you know, thus far prior to this game, this season, Pedro Santos not really putting up the numbers for you, albeit no one was. But so you find a way to get him in the lineup, and Milton Valenzuela is a player that has had some injury history. He's also a young player who could be a, you know, attractive target for a team looking to upgrade at left back in a higher league. So I think it's just a, you know, great to have that as an option. Clearly gave you more than you were getting from Waylon Francis, who I know has also kind of struggled with fitness and staying healthy this season and throughout his career. I was excited to see Sanchez back there, and you can't argue with the results.
No, you can't. Murph, how much did, especially that first goal, come from being to, excuse me, to be able to train and to take some time to really prepare for Toronto this time around. It seems to me, just as a fan watching, that goal came out of a skull session on how Toronto might want to play that.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, you do work on, we talked about defending set pieces and things like that, but you obviously work on those counterattack moments. And that one was obviously, you know, get the ball to Diaz and let him run, but you have to get the ball to him and then he has to finish, right? And, you know, so both parts of that equation have to work out. And you know, we talk about Diaz's lack of finishing, lack of decision-making a lot. He did all the right stuff there, but somebody still has to put him in that position. And Santos, you know, played a great ball. You know, I think he was, Caleb Porter had talked about it, that they hadn't gotten that attacking left back that they are used to with Waylon Francis. He played well defensively in the games. I think he's 6-7 games now he had started without Waylon, or without Milton, sorry, in there. So, you know, you finally got that kind of normal feel of a balanced attack on both sides. And you saw it on the second goal with the way that I think it was Etienne who gave the ball to Santos and then on an overlap. And then Santos puts the ball in and Giassi's able to finish. So, you know, it was what you expect out of the crew when they're, you know, fully healthy and Milton's attacking and Harrison's attacking and you've got your wingers. You just did it in a little bit different way.
The second goal, and this is a lot of what you've heard on the television broadcast, certainly, and it's something that we've talked about, the lack of service for Giassi's artist, how much of that is on him as if he's supposed to attract the ball like a magnet, but he does need to put himself into dangerous positions. What a beautiful ball to him, and what an imaginative finish, huh, Ori?
Absolutely. It was a great goal. That first half is the best half of Crew soccer we've seen this season in MLS play. I would argue still the best half of soccer that they played was probably against Monterrey that second half in Columbus, just because of the opponent and sort of the stage and the pressure in that half. But from a standpoint of transition and quicker buildup, they looked fantastic in those first 45 minutes. And I also wanted to point out, well, two things I want to point out. With the first goal, one thing, the fact that Diaz is the guy positioned outside of the box, not really marking a man inside the 18, is really, really smart. Because you think about it, you usually have your striker out there outside of the 18. But who do we always see win headers off of corner kicks? Jossie Zardes. Who's the fastest guy on the field? Luis Diaz. So anytime the ball just pokes itself out of the 18 and Pedro Santos can just jump on it and just hit a through ball, Diaz has a 60-yard breakaway. So that could be something that they could utilize more in the moments where, again, you need the ball to fall in the right spots. But that service from Santos was beautiful to Jossie Zardes. He should have had two, because I asked him after the game, that first goal that he scored that got disallowed, Etienne shoots it. It's deflected off a Toronto defender, and I'm pretty sure it hit off of him again before Zardes touched the ball. Zardes was offside when Etienne shot it, but then it hit off a Toronto defender, which wouldn't make him offside anymore. So he really should have had a brace. But either way, Zardes scores. They tried to disallow that second goal. Nobody knew why. It was the cleanest goal you've seen. And he's now in the 50-goal club. 50 goals now in MLS play for Jossie Zardes, one of six players in black and gold history with 50 goals. So we can safely say that Jossie Zardes is among the Crew legends right now.
Absolutely.
I don't get to do this often, but it's 50 goals for club, 45 goals in MLS play for Jossie Zardes.
Okay, there we go. Thank you for the clarification, Bart. Appreciate that.
Does the Toronto goal bother us at all? We've been talking about, obviously, you don't want to give up goals, but we've been talking about the defending being not quite what we're used to lately. Murph, any comment after the game about that? Any concern? It is what it is. What?
I don't know if I would put it quite in the level of concern at this point, but you've seen a couple times this year, now twice against Toronto specifically, where there's been balls in the box that, like, there's just kind of a lackadaisical approach to getting it out of there. And you go back and look at this one, and the first one was that free kick that Toronto scored where Michael Bradley scored. But this one, you know, guys are just kind of watching each other and no one kind of takes that initiative to, you know, step up and just get the ball the hell out of there. And so I don't think it's a concern. I just think it's something that you certainly point out in film. You maybe do some drills where you know, you're getting the ball out of the box and kind of reinforce it with the guys. Obviously this team was so good defensively last year. Sometimes you just have to kind of touch on these little things again to clean things up. You know, this team's still been very good defensively. What was more concerning to me was that they didn't have the same ability to break Toronto down in the second half. And obviously the Crew were willing to take the sting out of the game a little bit. Toronto obviously made some adjustments and, you know, tried to get back in the game. But I thought at halftime, Ori and I talked about it on our Instagram Live, you know, that game probably at that time felt like it was going to be a 3-4-0 win. And I think if you walk, you know, 3 points right now is good for the Crew, but if you walk out of that game, a 4-0 winner against even a struggling Toronto team, you feel really good about this break now, you know, going into the break. I still think you feel pretty good, but I would have liked to see them just kind of control the game and really kind of continue that dominance from the first half. But in terms of the defending specifically, I think they showed a few other times that they're still pretty strong defensively. It was just kind of a mental lapse that they need to clean up.
Well, certainly, especially at the end of the game, we showed our strength again in just not allowing a lot of dangerous touches and quickly getting the ball cleared away. And at that point, when you're just trying to, as you say, take the air out of the game, just pounding the ball away and being smart and just, and they weren't able to put anything together at the end. And that's certainly what I like seeing. That's your prerogative, certainly as a team in the lead. I feel like Toronto's kind of a weird team right now because I look at them and I go, these guys should be doing better than they are. They seem to always play us tough, obviously. But here they sit with 7 points in 12th place in the East, just or I should say 5 points, and just one. And FC Cincinnati, they've got, Bart, they've got like a house of fire situation up there. I think maybe they're starting to get worn out by not being able to go home.
Well, yeah, I mean, you factor that in. There's the entire controversy around Jozy Altidore, who, you know, last week it's reported, and it wasn't, I'll admit I haven't dug too far into the reporting, whether it's, you know, he chose to train, you know, away for the team or they asked him to, you know, train separate from them. But that just sounds, I mean, when you get to that point, it's hard to think that there's any way of repairing a relationship with the player, right? So you need to find a way to offload a designated player. I wouldn't say necessarily caliber striker, but certainly you know, a one who's paid that at that degree, and you're in a situation like Crew found themselves in, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, with Kai Kamara, when you kind of have a one out striker, kind of everybody seems to know it's the case, and you know, already it's kind of wonky the way that you know, MLS teams are able to do business, and, you know, whether you trade him to get, you know, some more TAM or GAM or, you know, whatever spots and yeah, exactly. And you know, I don't know if you've got to deal with work permit stuff on top of that, with, you know, a player who's technically playing for a Canadian team that's playing in Florida or wherever it is they are right now. You know, it's just really a shame because couldn't be happening to a club and player that I enjoyed more and just want to see succeed. There was a time with Jozy, never with Toronto though. So you hate to see it. You just really do.
Well, at least Michael Bradley was there for a Crew fan to lard on the bile, if I could just mix my metaphors. And we were out in full throat. I don't think that the supporters are ever going to forget his comments. How many years ago was that now? Like 3 years ago? Everything just kind of runs together at this point. But Burp, you say enough. Lay off the former U.S. national team captain.
It was in 2017, Brian. Uh-huh. And I would venture to guess that most of the people there on Saturday that were booing don't even know what Michael Bradley said. And I know that a lot of them, because I saw people very confused, were very confused why Michael Bradley was getting booed or who was getting booed, because it's so inconsistent. Here's my thing. And you know, when I wrote this on earlier this week, It was my opinion. So take it or leave it. And obviously some people have left it. This is a thing that happens in sports, and, you know, in soccer, it's specifically a thing that happens when a guy has the ball that, you know, has either said something or done something. You know, I think back to the early days of the Crew, Paul Caligiuri, a national team defender, didn't want to be in Columbus after he was kind of assigned to the team in 1996, demanded a trade to the Galaxy, and Crew fans booed him for a long time. Longer than this. And I remember thinking at the time, like, okay, this is a national team guy. I get why it's happening, but I've had the same feeling now as I did then. Now, you know, Bradley obviously had his issues with the national team, not qualifying for the World Cup, which I think kind of started a lot of people's dislike of that whole group. And, you know, kind of their response to it and things like that. And then Bradley made the statement. And I'm going to read this to you because I think that a lot of people have heard that Bradley said negative things. And I don't think a lot of people have actually heard or read what he said, because I don't think that it's as bad as people make it out to be. So he was asked about it after a 0-0 tie in the conference finals in 2017. And Bradley said, look, on one hand, you feel for the small group of loyal supporters that they have, who have been here since the beginning, who continue to support the team and come out week after week. On the other hand, you can't deny the fact that things here have really fallen behind in terms of the atmosphere in the stadium, the quality of the stadium, what it's like to play here. I don't know who's at fault for that. There's a lot going on, and I get that. And like I said, as an outsider, I don't know what that falls on. But again, the reality is that as the league has continued to grow and grow, and this is not the only one, but this is one of the few markets that has not kept pace. Now, I think if you are looking at this from a rational standpoint, it was really hard to argue, you know, with what Bradley was saying. Now, the fault of that, I think a lot of goes on Anthony Precourt, but I think Bradley was making a statement to answer a question he was asked about. It irritated me at the time. In fact, I wrote about how I thought Bradley's comments were out of line and he didn't even need to comment. But at this point, I think you've gotten to the point where you kept your team. You've won an MLS Cup. You've got great new ownership. You're going into this new stadium. I think if, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Michael Bradley will be looked at as a guy who was a very good player for mostly a good run for the U.S. national team, obviously not making the World Cup hurts, and, you know, a guy who came back in the prime of his career in MLS. So I think at this point, it just looks silly for Crew fans to boo him. You know, I think if you're watching that game from a neutral standpoint, you're very confused why he's getting booed. And as I said before, I think there were a lot of people in the stadium who didn't know who was being booed or why. So, you know, I just, as I wrote, I think it's time to let go. If Crew fans don't want to do that, go ahead. You know, I'm not making decisions for anyone. I was just offering one man's opinion on the situation. Bart, tell me why I'm wrong.
I'll point to the first thing. First of all is, you are expecting fans, which I believe is short for fanatics, to make the rational decision. So you're off on that. I mean, the easy thing is, you know, I think fans are absolutely entitled to boo Michael Bradley because Michael Bradley, it's not that, you know, he owes it to Columbus Crew fans to apologize and say, you know, I shouldn't have said that, but it could have been very easy. You pointed out, Patrick, he didn't need to say it. He didn't need to weigh in. He didn't need to carry the league's water and use the exact league talking points. Oh, well, the market isn't catching up and oh, this, but he did. He chose to do that. And he did it on the, and I think, you know, the boos, again, started, they predated those statements. They came back because of the team that failed to qualify and him being part of that and the kind of lack of accountability that I think a lot of fans saw with that. But also it came from the fact that, you know, we grew up all watching Michael Bradley when he was performing, you know, in the heyday for the U.S. team and impressive, getting him on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a player for Roma. And, you know, he's going to be the new hope for American soccer. And then he did precisely what you mentioned, Patrick. He came back in the prime of his year to MLS, of his career to MLS, which it's fine if you want to do that. But, you know, it was something that then exposed fans a lot to him. It exposed him to the type of player he is when you had to face your team versus the guy that you're always cheering for because you're cheering for USA. And Michael Bradley's a pretty dislikable player to watch when you are playing against him, when he's on the opponent, partially because in his prime, he's also producing, he's frustrating you, he's tracking back, he's scoring big goals, but he's also whining after every call. And he's going out of his way to kick fans down when they're down to carry MLS's water. So, you know, if he doesn't want to be booed, then he can apologize to Crew fans. But I think it's kind of fun. And I think for Crew fans, I take pride in our level of pettiness, because it takes something to be petty about something like that when you are just, because of all the reasons that you've stated, because we're defending champs, because we're about to move into a new stadium, and we're still going to hold a grudge for a thing that this guy said 4 years ago. I love it. I'm here for it.
Ori, you still won't, and you brought it up in our chat here. You're right. That giveaway ago is still sticking in my craw.
Yeah, I literally have that play just tattooed in my brain. I remember watching that Portugal USA game in the World Cup. USA takes a 2-1 lead. All they had to do was try and clear the freaking ball and kick it away from Cristiano Ronaldo, but Bradley was passing it short with 20 seconds left, and Ronaldo crossed it and Varela scored, and the US tied it. And that moment killed all the momentum the U.S. had in that World Cup. They beat Ghana. They were about to beat Portugal, who were going to be the European champions 2 years later. And they tied, and Bradley made that mistake. But hey, Bradley's had some good moments for the USA in terms of big game moments. His big equalizing goal against Slovenia in 2010. His, what was it, like a 50-yard screamer against Mexico in qualifying. But obviously that qualification campaign didn't lead to anything. But yeah, I mean, I was a little surprised to hear the amount of boos. I think it'd be interesting to see if Crew fans would boo other players a little more other than Bradley in that particular game. But
I think Chris Wondolowski is a guy who, if you're going to blame players mm-hmm. for World Cup failures, Chris Wondolowski.
And for the record, I think we should boo Wando.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows when the hell the next time the Crew's going to play the Earthquakes? They're not playing them this year. Who even knows if they play them next year? And by that time, who knows if Wando is still in the league? Yeah, Wando's going to be in the league till he's 60. He's going to be on the Quakes for another 20 years.
I doubt Bradley cares too much one way or the other whether we boo him or not, to be quite honest. But it's kind of – I wouldn't be petty. It's part of the full experience of being a fan. You've got players in every sport that you just cannot stand. I don't know. There's just something about him beyond the words and the giveaway. There's just, I don't know. He has a punchable face or something.
Oh yeah. And then like, you know, it's like, they're like the first family of USA soccer. You had, you know, father son combo. And just like, they were the closest thing to royalty and feels like he's entitled to still be treated as such.
I actually dislike Bob Bradley significantly more than I like Michael Bradley. I dislike Michael Bradley because I thought Bob Bradley kind of made his career on coaching. Now he went over to Europe and got some stuff there. But growing up, I remember thinking, well, you were an assistant coach for the most successful DC yeah. United team. Then you got given this Chicago Fire team that was loaded with talent. And now you're the national team coach and I'm supposed to just accept that. And, you know, you want to talk about a guy who's not likable for comments he's made. I mean, Bob Bradley has a comment for everything. So he's the one, he's the Bradley that I don't like.
Well, we'll all have our own Bradley to boo then, wherever Bob Bradley is. Could he have taken Swansea back to the Premier League the other day? I guess we'll never know since he was only the manager there for like 3 days. Maybe it was a little longer than that. All right. Anything else about the game before we put it to bed?
The blue jerseys were very blue.
Yeah. I mean, after a while, I guess I got used to it, but I'm glad it's not going to be a thing every week. It was very confusing.
I don't get like why they can't, I understand, you know, a template, but why can't they just have different colors for the teams, right? Why do they all have to be, is it that much cheaper? Like, you couldn't do like a tint, just the same pattern, but like yellow or, you
that
know,
would
black
require
or something?
Creativity, Bart.
It's you not even creativity. It's just like, it's just, you know, you slide the color thing on the graphic and that's all. You just,
I don't know. The one thing I wanted to mention, because I don't know how many people saw it, Jonathan Mensah not starting. Had a false positive COVID test Friday. So he didn't train Friday while they went to have a second test. And so even though it came back with a false positive, they decided, you know, to go with Vito and Josh, because that's who they worked with on Friday. So things are good there. But, you know, I don't know how many people, I know we have people that listen that don't pay attention to Twitter. So maybe didn't see that come out after the lineup was released. But yeah, so everything's good there.
So I take it the players, like other sports, are not required to get vaccinated if they don't want to. And I have no idea where Mensah falls on that. But I don't know. Do we have it? Do they even release information, Murph, about the percentage of every team that has vaccinated players? I know baseball is talking about, well, when you get to 85%, you can open things up on the road. You can go out to dinner and so forth.
Yeah, there was something with the crew about, I think it was like something like 86% of the team is vaccinated, but that didn't clarify who all that meant. So, you know, I know there are players on the team that for one reason or another, and we don't need to go into that, but that have not been vaccinated, but it sounds like the vast majority of them are. So, and, you know, in terms of travel and stuff, I think we talked about this last time, but you know, from here on out, they will be able to travel more normally. That New York City trip was the last one that they'll have to travel day of game. So vaccination or not, things will sort of start to get back to normal in terms of traveling and going on the road.
Good. I look at this as sort of a touchstone, a point in the season because of the pause, where you can pause and look at where you've been, where you think you're going, and sort of assess and what we can do better. So I don't know how we want to do this. Maybe we'll start with and then give us one thing that they could do better.
One thing they can do better. Well, I mean, the first thing I wanted to say regarding sort of the season assessment is obviously this team had incredibly high expectations. Everyone's talking about this crew team as being, you know, one of the most loaded teams we've seen in MLS, and they might run away with the Eastern Conference. So based on that expectation, they're falling below expectations. But I think one thing Columbus can be better at is being able to diversify their game plans. I think you saw that with Toronto in that game on Saturday. Mix things up. You were quicker in the buildup, and you got yourself 3 points. And again, the proof is in the pudding too. When they have time to train, they're better. And throughout this first portion, first quarter of the season, whatever you want to call it, they've really only had maybe 3 or 4 games where they've had a week to prepare for said game. And I think, thinking about it now, it was the 2 Real Esteli games, which they both won because any MLS team, C team, would be able to beat Real Esteli, it seemed, on both those days. And then New York City and Toronto, which they won both those games. And then that middle portion of the season, to be fair to the crew, though, as much as people look at that middle portion and talk about the lack of rest and the lack of wins, for a team that is had a lot of injuries to key players and new signings, they did okay. You know, they've got 11 points right now. They're only 2 points behind Philly with a game in hand at this point. Right now, the clear-cut best team in the Eastern Conference is New England. And even so, if Columbus were to win their game in hand, they would only be 3 points behind the Revolution. So they're still well within the running to be the number one seed in the East. Surely a potential playoff team. It's a very competitive conference this year, but overall it's been a decent start for the team. It hasn't been as incredible as people expected it, but obviously you had the injuries. Aiden Morris getting hurt really sucked. It's unfortunate that he can't play this season because there was a lot of expectations for him, and we saw the way that he played against Esteli in Nicaragua, and everyone's like, this kid's the real deal. And we want to see him play more. Kevin Molino not being there for the start of the year. He's finally going to be back once this break ends, and he could really open things up. And you also want to see a little bit more of Perry Kitchen too. I think when we saw Perry Kitchen play against Philly, he showed his veteran experience and just being a great just one-on-one defender and controlling the midfield when the other team has the ball, and he showed leadership. This team has a lot of leaders, and I think Perry Kitchen is one of the best leaders. So I'm talking to the ref. You saw him talking to his guys. He's going, I think he's going to be a huge, huge person to join back into this team and really affect that midfield.
Or I think you mean Kevin. His name is now Kevin after the Zlatan article in the Athletic.
Kevin?
What?
Yeah.
Kevin?
Zlatan called him Kevin for the entire time they were on the Galaxy.
What, Kevin Kitchen?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. He precisely. Just,
the way okay. that the story read, and there were multiple versions of the same story, so it was a little all over the place. But it sounds like he got his name wrong once in a meeting and just rode with it because of Zlatan. And so, I'm looking forward to it. It sounds like soon we'll get back to being able to be at training and kind of interact with these guys on more than a Zoom call. So I'm looking forward to just, you know, off the record, having a conversation with him about his recollection of that story and Zlatan in general, because everyone I've ever talked to about him has said, guy's a nut job in the best way.
That reminds me of the great Ricky Henderson. And we all know what a flake he was and is. And the ultimate Ricky Henderson story is when he joined the Mariners in 1999 and John Oliver, he was playing first base. And John, of course, because he had an aneurysm when he was in college at Washington State, had to wear a helmet in the field. And Ricky went to John when he joined the Mariners. He goes, hey, man, we had a guy with the Mets who had to wear a helmet all the time in the field, too. Isn't that weird? And John Oliver goes, yeah, that was me. That was me. I was also your teammate with the Mets.
Yeah, that's a similar story.
Oh, John. That's one of my favorite sports stories of all times. Such a great hitter, too, John Oliver.
That's a Bart, guy I remember.
Oh, wait, Ori, do you have a letter grade for the team real quick?
Letter grade. I would say right now I would give the crew a B. We'll give them a B.
A B? I'll have to think about my grade. I'm kind of hovering around there, but I'll give it a few more moments. Bart, I know you have a thought about what we could do better.
Yep. I want this crew to score goals from the run of play. We saw it happen last week. It was nice. It was the first time that we've seen it all season. So I'd like to see more of it from the Columbus crew. Personally, that's just me, though. I mean, and overall, I think I believe I saw a stat. They have they're tied for or have the best start of a defending MLS Cup champ since 2015. Even with, with these wins. Now, granted, that's, I think, you know, points. The other teams may have had better goal differentials or things like that, or you know, played more attractive soccer for the games. But when it comes to points and producing, the crew are above the mean for defending MLS Cup champ, at least the last, you know, 5-6 years. So I think people need to put that in perspective. I think you need to put in perspective, we are a fifth of the way season through the season, not even a quarter of the way through the season. There's this weird, it feels like it's a big, you know, break and we've hit something because we've got this 3-week break coming up, but this is still the infancy of the season for the crew. And what we've seen, you know, under Caleb Porter teams, is that it's, you know, taken a while for them to kind of hit their stride, but when they have, they've generally, you know, started producing and producing at a high level. So I'm not too concerned about this. They're going to get healthy. We've seen, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the season before this, you know, it was so important to have all this depth so you can survive the injuries, you can survive the rotation, you can hopefully be able to make a run in CONCACAF Champions League. That part obviously didn't meet we didn't meet it. And that's because of injuries, but they were able to survive, tread water very well through these first 7 games or so. And I think once you get guys back, once you introduce a Kevin Molino into this lineup, when you bring back Milton Valenzuela and think of how well he was playing early on, how dangerous he was in those games against Monterrey, I think that they are going to be just fine. So I'm not too worried. I give them a J for Josh Williams.
Okay, fair enough. We almost had a Josh Williams goal the other day.
I know.
Oh, I was so excited. So close. It's going to happen. It has to happen sometime. Murph, what can we do better?
My thoughts are really similar to Bart's, actually. I think that, you go back and look at how the MLS season is at a fifth way point for a lot of teams, and a lot changes between then and the end of the season. So I think we'll see, Ori mentioned New England's the top team in the East, and that's obviously true. Whether that is sustainable, we'll see. In the game against the Crew, I didn't think they looked overly dangerous. I'd have to look at their schedule and who they played, but I think a lot will change. And I think the Crew are moving in the right general direction. I do think you need to get this offense going. Caleb Porter made a point last week that the Crew, even before under Greg Berhalter, weren't a high scoring team. They're not going to be the top two or three, four in the league just because of the kind of players they are able to get. But that, they score enough. And I think you need to see some more of that. It was nice to see on Saturday guys find goals from the run of play. But I agree with both what Ori and Bart said, that things need to be a little bit better diversified. And I think that'll happen as players get healthy and everyone gets comfortable. So that's my big thing. And I'll probably go, B minus, just because of the expectations. We knew that there was going to be a congested schedule. That is kind of subsided now. And so I want to start seeing this team getting results and the last two games they have. I think there's good things to come from this group.
Well, speaking for myself, I was really gratified to see the improvement on the run of play on Saturday. And I expect that to continue. It just goes back to being able to have a routine and to train and to prepare for each opponent separately, instead of trying to slap it together as you go along. One thing I'd like to see, and this goes back, it seems like we talk about this year after year, is our corner kicks are still just not particularly dangerous. And I'd like for that to improve. And hopefully on the training ground at long last, we can do that. And I'll give us a B minus as well, because I'm just a tough grader, I guess. Pretty good, but let's talk a little bit about during this 3-week break, because as it turns out, we could keep ourselves almost every day once we get going. And Ori, the competition that maybe people are least familiar with, Nations League, what is this and why is it important?
So basically, the story kind of starts with UEFA, and UEFA started this competition called the Nations League, which is sort of like, imagine countries sort of in divisions like a club sort of organization or structure, and playing each other in a league format. And then the top league, they play each other in sort of a finals. Essentially, this was put into place by UEFA to cut out a lot of these meaningless friendlies during international breaks, and also to give the chance for smaller nations in UEFA to qualify for the Euros or even the World Cup, because the Nations League, in a very complex system, offers ways for small countries to make the Euros. For example, for the Euros that start here in just a few weeks, North Macedonia is playing in the European Championships. They are only there because of the Nations League. They had the opportunity to make this tournament because of the UEFA Nations League. And it's probably going to be very similar with CONCACAF, and CONCACAF adopted the same system. And in the top division, League A, you obviously have the best teams. So you've got the United States playing Honduras in a semifinal on Thursday. Costa Rica with the Crew's own Luis Diaz will be playing Mexico that same day. And all games are going to be in Denver. And this is just a way for teams to compete against the top nations in CONCACAF, for the United States to play Mexico or Costa Rica a few more times, test themselves against higher competition rather than playing, meaningless friendlies against, El Salvador or Jamaica in the middle of the fall. So you'd rather have this competition going on and playing against these teams more. So, and Luis Diaz is going to be one of five Columbus players on an international break during this 3-week MLS break. So obviously Diaz with Costa Rica, you've got Alex Matan is going to be with the under 23 Romanian team. They've got two friendlies in Spain, and very, very good chance that Alex Matan gets called to the Romanian Olympic team. They are in the Olympics for the men's football tournament. So it's very possible he could be going to Tokyo. Depending if the Olympics, it seems right now that they're going to happen. So, and if that does happen, then Matan is going to be gone for a good chunk of the summer. And then you've got the three players playing in World Cup qualifiers. And these World Cup qualifiers coming up in CONCACAF, where teams finish, especially the three crew players involved, could have an effect on the crew this season. Aloy Room is with Curaçao. They've got some qualifying matches. You've got Derek Etienne with Haiti, and you've got Liam Fraser with Canada, a stacked Canadian team. So essentially, all three of these teams are going to be playing in the first round of qualifying. I would argue that Canada and Curaçao probably have the best chances of advancing to the second round. Haiti has their shot too, but they have a big game against Nicaragua on June 8th. That could be a tough one where Haiti might get eliminated from qualifying. And essentially, you've got six first round groups, winners of each group. You've got three matchups. And the winner of those three two-legged ties that are happening on June 12th and June 15th, those three nations will join the final octagonal CONCACAF group with the likes of the U.S. and Mexico and Costa Rica and Honduras. And those teams will start playing qualifiers in the fall. So as a prime example, let's say Aloy Room and Curaçao win their first round group and win their second leg tie. Aloy Room will not just be gone for the summer for Gold Cup. He will probably be gone for parts of September, October, and November for qualifiers. So there's that to think about. We know that Liam Fraser and Derek Etienne Jr. also are probably going to be players gone for the Gold Cup. Luis Diaz potentially as well. So that's another thing that we have to keep in mind with this MLS season. Things are going to change, like Pat said, in part because every single one of these teams is going to have players go on international duty. Joseph Martinez could be going to Brazil for the Copa America for Atlanta United. What happens to Atlanta United if he's not there while he's with Venezuela? So a lot of stuff to think about. And like you said, Brian, there's going to be so much soccer on from now until like the middle of August with the Euros and Copa America and crew and MLS, you know, Gold Cup coming up. It's going to be so much soccer to consume and crew players in action right now. Keep an eye on these games because they can have an effect on who is available in the fall. We might see a lot more Evan Bush. We could see some Eric Dick in goal as well when we get to July. Maybe we see more of them in the fall based on how Curaçao does in this break.
So as a half Canadian, my mom was born in Calgary. Does Canada at long last have any chance of getting to the World Cup, or is that just a pipe dream?
I think they have a really good opportunity here. They are easily the best team right now in the first round of qualifying. I mean, you look at their squad and they're absolutely loaded. Liam Fraser, I don't know if he'll play. He likely won't start, but he could come on for some substitute appearances. But look at the talent that Canada has now, the likes of Alphonso Davies, Jonathan David, their striker, who just won Ligue 1 with Lille. You know, they've got Jonathan Osorio, Lucas Cavallini. They just have some really good talent on that Canadian team. You just look at the roster, players from Europe, players who exceed in MLS. And this is a good opportunity for them to make the final round of qualifying. They haven't done that since 1998 when they missed out on the World Cup. Canada has qualified for the World Cup before. I can't recall when, but I think it was only one time. But you look at
I think it was 86
or 82. Yeah.
Yeah.
82 in Spain.
It's been a long time,
but
it's, well, it's good to hear that that program is on the upswing.
Yes,
because I think it's more fun. It's been such a long time that none of you guys will even remember that.
Right.
Well, I'm a fan, huge as you guys are, of the Euro. Closely, you're looking at it, Murph. But is there a team, maybe a dark horse, a favorite that you like? What are you thinking when you think of this year's one-year delayed UEFA Euros?
What I'm thinking is I'm excited for it because after last summer and just waiting around for sports to resume, this summer will give us that plus the World Cup then next summer. In terms of a dark horse, I haven't looked at it that closely. I think it'll be interesting to watch, just being a fan of the English Premier League, how England does. You make it to the semifinals of the World Cup 3 years ago. You then want to follow that up with a good performance, in the next Euros. But obviously, things have changed a little bit and players kind of come and go and whatnot. So that's a team I'm going to keep an eye on. I think all the big boys of European soccer are interesting. I always kind of look at this, despite it being its own big event, just kind of a preview for what will be in the World Cup. traditionally a 2-year time period off, this year just one, so even more so. But just kind of getting some ideas of guys that, you know, maybe younger guys on teams and things like that. And it's always interesting, the guys that that blow up in tournaments like this, and this happens in the World Cup as well, and then get, you know, big transfers. Who was the guy for Portugal, I guess 5 years ago now, who ended up with the move to Bayern Munich, and
Renato the Sanchez, central midfielder.
Yeah, who he's never
now
really...
on Lille. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's had a fine career, but looked like, you know, the next great potentially Portuguese player, and, you know, didn't work at Bayern. So it's always interesting to see those guys. So those are kind of things that I keep an eye on when I watch these tournaments, but I'm really just glad that we're going to have it. You know, I mean, even when they announced last year that it wouldn't happen, it'd be postponed, we were all hopeful, I think, but, you know, we didn't know, especially, you know, everyone has to travel to the, and there's, it's a lot different than trying to do a league, I think. So I'm glad to have it back. And I think it's only just another positive sign of things really getting back to normal.
Yeah. I mean, if you've never watched the European Champion, ESPN and ABC are showing all the games. It looks like their windows are 9, noon, and 3 p.m. So you're going to have to, if you work a 9-to-5 type of gig, you're going to have to. Well, I'm telling you what, this is just a great tournament, and it will really suck you in. So just, you know, go back through your ancestry and figure out where you fit in, and, you know, pick some bowl for Wales, because I got a lot of Welsh in me, for whatever that's worth. So, you know, just pick somebody and back them, or maybe your favorite player plays, as you say, we're familiar with. But it really is a great tournament. And of course, Bart, you've been busy with Columbus Eagles. For those not familiar with Columbus Eagles, as we take it back home, what is Columbus Eagles and where can we see them?
Yeah, so Columbus Eagles are the local professional women's soccer team. They play in the WPSL, which is the level below the top level, you know, Chicago Red Stars and the like. But they play their games, home games. And there is one during this break, Sunday, the 13th of June at Bernlohr Stadium. Encourage you to get tickets to that. You can. ColumbusEaglesFC.com. Tom Costello on the Master Report does great coverage for the Eagles and gets you great game recaps. But you can also, if you cannot attend in person, which again, I encourage you to, you can tune in. We do webcasts, web broadcasts of all the home games. We unfortunately do not travel for the away games, but the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls.
You got to get that in the budget, group. Bart.
Yeah,
the travel budget.
You know, if someone else wants to call it, the thing is, I already did the traveling radio broadcast man for a small minor league team shtick when I worked for the Youngstown Fandoms of the USHL for 3 years. And as much as I enjoy calling those Eagles games, I enjoy it because it's a lot of fun, and sometimes traveling, maybe for the odd game, but don't need to spend too much time on the bus. But do encourage people definitely to tune in. We have a lot of fun with the broadcasts, and people have said nice things about them, like we do them, you know, somewhat professionally. You can watch them. We do the Twitter. You can do it on Facebook, and then it's My Cujo, which is what it's streamed on, and you can also access links to all of them from the Columbus Eagles website, ColumbusEaglesFC.com.
And what stadium is that?
Bernlohr Stadium, Capital University's
home. Oh, ground. Great. Yep. Okay. Now, my youngest, Izzy, she's now retired, having hung up her cleats after high school. But are there a lot of local women who played high school here in Central Ohio that the Eagles?
Yeah. No, actually, the vast majority of them played high school, but then also, you know, went on. And these are women that have had collegiate careers.
Right.
You know,
right.
All Big Ten players. Marique Mousset, a terrific right back that they've got, who's a former captain at Ohio State. But a lot of them, you know, local. There are a number of Capital products, a number of Ohio University, Olivia Molesky, their number 10, a great playmaker, and she was with the Bobcats A lot of action, which, you know, as a Mac guy myself, Bobcat specifically, I love to see. And it's just, it's fun, great competition. It's just, you like supporting local soccer and want to especially, you know, grow the women's game and what they've been doing here. And it's great. We've got Kennedy from the Hive, if people are familiar with that supporters group of, you know, now they're like 13-year-old girls. They were, you know, middle schoolers, elementary school kids when I first started in Nordic. But it's great. She's a sideline reporter for us for our broadcasts. And it's just fun to support local professional soccer. The Nordic is also sponsoring them this year. So it's a great story. And it's a great product too. They had a terrific loss, but 2-1, but really fun, attractive soccer last Saturday.
Sounds good.
Yeah, they are good. You know, and Bart mentioned Thomas does a great job covering them. Ralph did it for us before. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've been to a couple games. I actually play co-ed with a few of the girls who play on the team. And, you know, for a team that, you know, you don't have a set roster every week, so it's a lot of changing, especially on the mm-hmm. road. You know, they did well and they won the indoor league, their indoor division at least. So, you know, it's been a tough start to the season, but it is certainly something to check out, especially Bart, as Bart said, during this 3-week break where you don't have any crew games to compete with. You know, the games are a lot of fun and it is good soccer.
Let's I'm just throwing this out there, Bart. Let's find a player or two to join us when we are together at Saucy.
Ooh,
for the podcast. Call. Get to know them a little bit better. I think that would be fun.
That's a good call. I'll see if I can pull some strings. You know, sure. I've got some connections.
Why wouldn't they want to hang out with us? I mean, come on.
Well, when you put it like that, we're going to have a hard time.
Why wouldn't they want to hang out at Saucy?
That's true. You go. That's true. They're all of age. I mean, you gotta have a little fun, even if you're in training. Good Lord. We'll feed them too. Just tell them that. We'll feed them. Was into a free meal, I'm sure. I'm sure they don't get paid tons of money. All right. Anything else? What's
Brian,
that?
Are you feeding us too? Or is it just
well, I think Saucy's feeding us, aren't they?
Saucy is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sure. I don't know. You guys working out. I'm just throwing stuff out there, seeing what sticks.
Well, I want to throw something out there.
I think that about wraps it up. Did we cover everything? Anything
Pretty
else?
Much.
Can't speak really up now or forever withhold your speech or whatever.
I just wanted to throw something out there for the Euros. I'm incredibly excited and to go along with Copa America. France is by far the favorite because they have Benzema for the first time in 5 years. Portugal stack two, go Portugal. That's my team. But yeah, France is really good. I'm picking them to win the whole thing. And I don't think Holland wins their group. I think Ukraine wins their group. So Ukraine underdog. Watch out for Ukraine.
All right, so I should drive to West Virginia and bet on France? Is that what you're saying?
I would put my bets on France, Portugal, or Belgium. All this England talk, I am not high on England right now, personally. I think they're good. Yeah, I don't know.
Brian, I would drive to Indiana if I were you rather than West Virginia, but that's just...
West Virginia seems closer. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's Maybe West not. Virginia.
Yeah, you know what? West Virginia is really pretty. It's prettier than Indiana. Drive through Indiana. I prefer West Virginia. You got the mountains and the trees. It's beautiful. Come on now. I'm going to Wheeling. The wife and I will take a Sunday drive and do that. That here. I don't understand. It's just silly. It's silliness, but that's for another day and another time. Down one more time there, Ari.
Sure. Saucy Brew Works. Guys, Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? They got great drinks, great pizza on 443 West 3rd Avenue. We will hopefully be there very, very soon. My guess is 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now, but I made that guess last time and that didn't happen. But I think this time around, 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, we can safely say that we're probably going to be at Saucy Brew Works recording a podcast in person and enjoying their great atmosphere, their great food, and their great drinks. So go check out Saucy Brew Works, check out this podcast, and check out MassiveReport.com and Twitter and Insta and Facebook, and like and subscribe.
Thank you, or you've covered everything. I don't have to do anything. I guess we're not going to be here next week regardless because there's no match. When do we want to reassemble? We want to reassemble again to not only preview the Chicago match on the 19th, and the old, what does Neil Seacon call it? The old lady, or he was calling the stadium the old lady or something the other day. I'll have to follow up with him on that. But we need to jot down our favorite memories of the stadium. Read that series, that fine series of MassReport.com as well, because we are going to say so long to our old friend, Classic Crew Stadium, after 22 years, moving into our new dig. So for our next podcast, be ready to spend a lot of time reminiscing about all. Till then, Burf, Ori, Bart, thank you. This is my radio station, CB92.9 FM. I'm on the Massive Report Podcast.